Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Back in 2007, Tom Wayne of Prospero's Used Bookstore in Kansas City was frustrated that so few people were still reading books. Tom Wayne couldn't even give them away, so he made a decision that sparked international news. He decided to burn them, hundreds of them. This is the funeral pyre for thought in America today, Tom Wayne told spectators as he lit up that first batch of books. 7 years later, Prospero's Books is still in business on West 39th Street. And guess what? More adults are reading for pleasure these days. In fact, the 57% who said they read for pleasure in 2012 is the highest it's been since 2002. That wasn't the case when Tom Wayne lit those books on fire in 2007, when the total had dropped below 50%. Well, good morning. We're coming to you live this morning from Prospero's Books, a mainstay of the 39th Street corridor. I'm joined by the store's owners. They are the aforementioned Tom Wayne. Tom, good to have you.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks for letting us into your home here. And Will Latham, good to see you again, too, Will.
Morning, Steve.
Well, I'm wondering if the two of you are more bullish or less bullish today about the future of the printed word than you were, you know, back in 2007 when you guys, Will, were burning all those books. What about it? You feeling better about the state of the book industry these days or not?
I'm feeling good that we're still standing. Part of that is a lot of the folks that used to be our competition have closed, so we get a little bit bigger piece of the pie. But people are reading. I mean, we get a lot of young folks in here, and people keep reading books.
And you think they're reading more today than they were 5-7 years ago?
I don't know if I'd go that far, but, I mean, no. I don't know that I would say they're reading more that I see, but people continue to buy books.
But, Tom, you're not burning them anymore. That's a good sign.
Well, you know, I don't have as good a reason as I did before.
Yeah.
And it was to, you know, ideally it was to get rid of the 20,000 books we had that were in boxes on pallets in a warehouse that we, you know, you run a bookstore for years before you even throw one away. You get to the point where you have to throw them away or you can't even get in the door. And, you know, it was satire on a culture that has a disconnect between what it says and what it does in that. Due to that study and the fact that retailers and libraries throw books away by the container load, they say that books are sacred, but they're not. So in order to get rid of those, you call attention to them. If you get real live media, big boy media, and I figured somebody would up and take them, prison system, small town library, inner city school district.
But they weren't.
And well, once the media happened, I mean, it ended up in 600 newspapers due to the AP.
I was going to say 600 newspapers, and I had a total here: 600 print stories, 40,000 blog posts, dozens of radio appearances, including Up to Date. I should point out CNN headline news, and a shout out from Stephen Colbert. Not too bad.
Well, it was. I found myself on CNN between George Bush and Lindsay Lohan. I'll drop that comment or thought there, but it was fun.
Well, are you still as discouraged today as you were in 2007, or have you sensed a change in any sort of direction?
Well, you know, in a more maybe esoteric level, one of the guys that helps us run the store here, John Reberg, and I, we speak about the word as a larger force, and sometimes we talk about the lost hope or respect maybe we've had for the word, but it's more a question of distribution, which is kind of what we do. And you know, there's statistics like you quoted, but at the same time, 12 years ago there was 30 bookstores in town. There was 8 or 10 like us. Today there's 12.
I was going to ask you how many stores are like Prospero's Books.
Well, we're the last one. We're about the last bookstore left in town. Well, indigenous, independent, local.
There's half-price books, which is more of a chain thing, right?
There's five Barnes & Nobles, 4 half-price, Rainy Day, and us. So there's nobody else really like us left. There's a couple little tiny genre stores. Maybe we overlook them, but
metric, it doesn't look so good.
Yeah, in a town that's 50 miles wide and has 2 million people in it, we got one used bookstore. I mean, it might be good for me, but I would like to have... I'd like to go into another one.
Is a used bookstore, Will, a good business to be in right now or not?
It's not. This is not a lifestyle you choose because you're looking to have the most lucrative lifestyle.
Yeah.
You do this for a lot of other reasons.
Like what?
One, I get to read in my off hours. We call it getting our pay. You sit behind the counter and read a book. But I think conversations are brilliant. You meet some of the most intelligent and intellectually acute people that you'll ever meet, walk in, and it's a broad breadth. We don't specialize in any one thing. So, mm-hmm. I mean, one moment you're talking, you know, slavery and history, and the next moment you're talking Haruki Murakami's newest tome, and it's great and fun, and that's part of why you do this. But
maybe a big reason, because you're saying you're not getting rich doing it.
You're not getting rich. We all live. We're all – bills get paid and stuff. But yeah. We're down here. If it, we've often talked – Tom and I and Jason have talked about how much we actually make an hour, which is rather frightening.
Tom, do you have any other reasons that you do it different than what Will just said?
No. That's – I mean, that's really what brought us together. I mean, Will and another guy opened the store originally, and when the other guy walked away, I happened to be there, mm-hmm. and I lived down the street, so it was easy to do, and it's ballooned into a unbelievable amount of stuff, especially since we've been working on our new space upstairs. But yeah, satisfaction is versus money is an odd balancing act. So,
but you get to read during your...
Yeah, nobody can tell me not to read a book.
Yeah. I've been in here any number of times. You're always reading a book when I come in here.
When I'm behind the counter, if nobody's in here, I generally read. When people are in here, I tend to put up books and look busy. I don't know why. It's some weird
just
early
to impress
training.
The customers here a little bit, yeah. Well, what are you reading right now? Anything that you'd point to?
I'm actually reading The Bell Jar, strangely enough. Mm-hmm. But
which is about what?
Sylvia Plath's time at an ad agency in New York City. Mm-hmm. And it's still relevant, and I'm not all the way through it, so I can't talk a lot about it. But yeah. I recently read Into Thin Air, which was one of those sit down and don't do anything else until you're done with books.
The John Krakauer
yeah.
book?
Yeah.
Yeah, about the guys climbing the mountains.
Unbelievable tale. Yeah.
The Himalayas and all that. Yeah. Will, what are you reading right now?
Zephon's Shadow of the Wind.
Tell us about it.
He's a Latin writer, Spain, Portugal, I can't remember. I think he's Spanish. But it's about a kid who gets introduced to a very magical secret bookstore by mm-hmm. his father,
yeah.
and where it leads him. And I mean, it's got moments of darkness, and it's magic. I tend to – last few years I've been really overtaken by the magical realism trends. And
you know,
fiction.
Going back to the book burning thing back in 2007, how else did that change your worlds here, given the attention that whole thing got? Again, worldwide news. How else did that change Prospero's books?
7 years later, we'd be behind the counter and people would walk in the door and go, you those guys have burnt those books, aren't you?
Hey, where did you do it?
Right out front.
Right out front here.
Yeah, there's a cauldron out front that Tom used to torch up the... We didn't burn as many as anybody likes to think.
It was a highly symbolic act. We actually burned a couple dozen books. The stranger part of it was practicing, because we couldn't have all these people here and not know what we're doing. And I've started plenty of fires, but I'd never burned books. So we burned, you know, we had to practice at it. And
they surprisingly didn't want to burn.
No, they don't want to burn. You have to be inventive. But the strangest
thing.
Why is
that? Because there's
no oxygen in there.
There's no oxygen in between the pages.
I mean, you can toss them in a flaming fire and they'll go. But to start it, you got to have something. But Will's kid, Riley, he was there when we did this. And he was a tiny kid. And he actually burnt a book before he read one.
That's true.
What a proud father you must be, Will Latham.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Yeah. That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
I forgot
What's a hot seller in this store right now? What kinds of books tend to sell more quickly than other kinds of books, Tom?
Howard Zinn, Noam Chomsky kind of stuff, if it's on our counter, moves fast.
Why is that?
We put certain stuff on the counter and in the windows and on the tables, and that's the stuff never really makes it to the shelf. We sell a lot of Lee Child's, which become a fan of.
Lee Child's?
Yeah.
Explain that.
The Jack Reacher novels.
Oh, yeah.
Tom Cruise was in one shot.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm. 5 foot tall John Cruise.
We got one right there.
It's
yeah.
Brilliant genre fiction that's completely absorbing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's done something unique. We sell a lot of Kerouac, a lot of Beat-related stuff. Hunter
Vonnegut.
Thompson.
Can't Vonnegut. Keep Vonnegut in.
So this neighborhood, the culture that sort of permeates 39th Street, permeates this store as well, then, in terms of the choices that your customers are making.
Well, and you can't forget, I mean, Restaurant Row. You guys had Walt on your guys' station for years, and he called it Restaurant Row. This is a meeting place that the whole city comes down here to eat.
We do sell a lot of cookbooks, actually. A lot.
Really?
Yeah.
Yep. And Sarah Palin's book went last week, even though you said it wouldn't.
Yeah. Do you ever run short of stock anymore, or are those days over?
What?
Well, we don't. I mean, being a used bookstore, we don't buy anything new, so it walks in the door. Mm-hmm. So it's a form of what circulates around, and it's probably more true to readings, long-term reading styles than a bestseller list, because these are things that span 40 years, and they circulate, and people ask for it. And in that regard, there's a lot of things we should get more of, but...
But, you know, also, like, right behind you over there, there's a rack of – these are all things written in 2014 hardbacks that have been out less than 6 months. I mean, they come in, too.
Yeah.
So,
but you don't worry about having enough stock because it always comes in the door.
So far. I mean, we haven't had to go drum some up in a long time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, people give us books. It's a weird thing. I mean, I've had come around a truck and take 3,000 books out of my house tomorrow, and they're all yours.
Is so, that right?
It takes you, you know, a week to get through those if you don't do anything else.
But you don't say no either.
Well, you can't.
Very
really.
Seldom.
Yeah. 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 Well, how did you two guys meet? How did that happen?
Well, I walked in the bookstore the week it opened.
Well, did you come by when we had the paper up on the windows? Didn't you stick your head in one day?
Right as they were opening, yeah.
And you opened in 1999?
Seven.
1997. Yeah. Okay.
And I had moved in down the street the week it opened. Mm-hmm. And, I'd been on 39th a lot because my brother owned a building and his girlfriend ran a dance studio. I mean, and I, in some regards, grew up on 39th, but I didn't know this was opening. And
neither did we. like the month before.
I ended up knowing Will. We went to the same high school. And immediately I started building bookshelves for trade and had plenty to read without ever actually buying any.
Yeah. Well, if you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're coming to you live from Prospero's Books on 39th Street. We're talking about the future of the printed word. Later on this hour, we'll turn to a list of their all-time favorite reads for both Tom Wayne and Will Latham. You know, Will, I've always wanted to ask you this because I first met you back, I'm guessing in the late 1980s, maybe the early 1990s, when you were working for Missouri Governor John Ashcroft. How did you go from working in state and national politics with Governor and then Senator Ashcroft to founding Prospero's Books here on 39th Street?
What's the guy I founded the store with was Jim Talent's roommate and worked in politics, too.
Oh, is that right?
And I mean, and not to be any, both those men read, and they read well. I mean, Jim Talent still shows up every now and then and buys all my Woodhouse, but
right here,
yeah. But had Dennis Moore in here last week buying stuff too. But,
did you?
But yeah, we it was a place. It was a place to not in the world of politics. You know this. It's business. It's all business. Even your friends are business. Mm-hmm. And we kind of started it as a place to go have a conversation that wasn't necessarily with that looking over our shoulders.
Were you tired of politics or the intensity of it? Maybe.
Yeah.
And I say that 2 weeks before a midterm election, which is eating my lunch right now. Yeah.
Well, I left. I mean, my last day in politics was in 2001, and I haven't looked back. And to be honest about it, I don't really miss it, though. Other people follow the Super Bowl of the Royals. When it's election time, we have 3 TVs set up in here and 30 people with beers yelling on election return night.
If you were honest, you'd say it was the absurdity.
Yeah. Of politics you're talking about.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But you don't miss it. You haven't looked back on it.
I don't miss it. It always was a fight. I mean, but there was Marcus of Queensberry rules. Now it's just unlimited cage fighting. And I think both sides have become so shrill that – I'm uncomfortable, and I don't have a home anymore. So I can't get very amped up about much. I get amped up about the issues. I don't get amped up about individuals.
So why a used bookstore at that point in your life? I mean, what was it that drew you to this kind of business?
Because I had 3,500 books sitting in my house.
It grew out of a bar.
Go somewhere.
Well, it also grew out of a bar stool conversation, which is pretty cool.
Yeah,
which
that's
what?
True.
What, Tom?
John
the
and I
idea
were,
to start the store.
I mean, tell me about that conversation.
Well, Will and John were on a bar stool, actually.
Gilhooly's.
Gilhooly's across the street. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to start a used bookstore. Yeah.
And, 1 month later, we had the doors open.
So they spent six really? Months later. They
no,
but they found – they went around town and did a good job of looking at locations, and this was probably about the best location they could have found. It definitely was.
Why this location?
We did old-fashioned market studies, and we took turns standing on the street corner with a pad, tabbing the number of people walking by based on what we could afford.
Oh,
we found a property we could afford, and you just stand under. Nope, we can't do this one. Doesn't have enough foot traffic.
Yeah, but here it was different.
Yeah. That's part of it's the secret. Tom's been a great business partner, and we have a great location, a good store. But it's the neighborhood, man. This neighborhood's alive. There's places in the city trying to spend thousands.
It's probably really
dollars.
Unique in Kansas City in that it's never been gentrified, and the retail that's here serves everybody that lives within a few block area.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more local walking traffic, actually repeat traffic. And that's a single reason we've survived is we're on this corner.
Well, and people, you say this. You have a good chance when you walk into a business on 39th Street of getting the owner behind a counter.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen many places. And there's a certain charm on that.
So. Well, Tom, you arranged the purchase of the building, if I understand right, because you used to be in real estate. When was this building constructed?
1890. And we have a safe in here from the 1890s that somehow got here without an engine, but people don't really understand how thing. It came here on a horse, and it's the first light in this building was gas.
Huh.
So it's
and this is the original floor.
Yeah,
it feels like it, and you love that about it, right? It used to be a grocery store back in the 1890s.
It was originally a grocery store for about 25 years, and then it was a hardware store, and then we moved in, and it's as far as I could tell.
What was it when you got it?
It had just closed as a hardware store.
Oh, and so it had been a hardware store for all the 1900s, basically.
Yeah, from 1915 until 2001. And I'd like somebody to call and tell me differently, but I think it's one of the, if not the oldest building that's been continually occupied and never closed in 125 years.
Wow.
I mean, there's a lot of old buildings, but they've been closed in renovated and
what kind of shape was it in when you got it?
Well, the kind of guys that own hardware stores are the kind of guys that'll sweep the dirt aside once or twice a year, and that's about it. And there was a lot of the glass was either bricked over or signs were over it. And I attempted basically to clean the 20th century out of it, and spent about 6 months all day, every day doing that. And it's really turned into a nice, it shined up nice.
Mm-hmm. How long did it take? So it took you 6 months to get it into shape, basically,
and
then the store opened?
But that's Will ran the store, and I was over here. And I actually was down here every single day for 180 days. Mm-hmm. And that's all I did. I have a dog run up and down the street because I live two blocks south of the store. Mm-hmm. And I get up, came down here, went home, slept, came down here. In 6 months, it was done. So
there you go. Well, Will Latham, you're also a publisher of something called the Spartan Press.
Yes, sir.
What's the Spartan Press?
One of the very first things, if you get on the website and look, one of our initial goals was to model on Shakespeare and Company and be a place where people who wrote and did music and painted would feel comfortable coming. And that we rushed. I was talking about this month. From the day we really decided to do this, we were open in a month, and we did it so we could be open on the date that Sylvian Beach opened Shakespeare and Company. So we opened on the same day.
Shakespeare, remind me what Shakespeare and Company is.
It was a store in Paris where all of the expats hung, Hemingway and Fitzgerald.
Sure.
And she published Joyce's Ulysses out of her own money. And all of those models and that juju was from the beginning. So we have published a little over 40 books now in about 8 years, I think. So,
and I gather there's a real community that's built up around this place and what it represents.
We do, and we have a lot of people approach us with stuff, and we help people even if we aren't going to do it ourselves. But Spartan does it. We've just helped brand new and just came out. It's unique. This is a record, and it's a book though. Now your record is the download card, and it's the Sexy Accident. They just released it. We were helping them get that out and done. But a lot of people come and do their releases here, even if we don't publish. But we have, if you turn around, you can see we keep them right inside. We keep all the books we publish that we still have in print, and we try and keep them in print.
You know, you also are the director of the literary arts nonprofit Write the Future.
Yep.
What is Write the Future, Will Latham?
Well, that was where we were raising the money to help folks get these done. Because there's not, the idea, the great thought that you're going to get a giant signing bonus and live off that for 2 years while you write your novel doesn't happen. So we were trying to come up with a way to support the writers, help them come up with ways to crowdsource and approach a few extra people who would give you a little bit of money to help you put a book out of quality, and then to help them figure out how to promo it and support it. And we've, I mean, again, it's a small world. We've gone after a very specific segment of writers. It's people who tend to be smart enough to have gotten master's and doctorates but chose other life courses.
Mm-hmm.
You're dealing with people who are very educated individuals, but a lot more dirt under their fingernails than probably don't quite fit into some of the other programs and options for getting published in America today.
Which, so, I guess, leads to the idea that sometimes writing a book and getting it published, what an arduous thing that is to go through, and those folks don't have a lot of support out there, do they?
And it's tough. I mean, you don't – nobody knows. It's just like working on a car. You don't know what you're doing until you start in, and it's nothing is easy that's worth doing.
Yeah,
and, I think a lot. I'm pretty darn proud of all of the books we've managed to help get out there. There are some really fine talents that call Middle America home, and you'll run into them in the aisles of Prosperos on any given night, sometimes two and three times a week.
And I guess, Tom, Will, if it's not clear, I should say you're a writer and a poet yourself.
I do.
Yeah. What do you do?
I've written a book. I write a blog. I've written three books, and I'm about done with a new novel. I've been on a 2-month run on an idea. And I'm really happy with it.
Do you write here in the store?
That's how I've been taking my pay. I haven't been reading as much. I've been writing.
But it works out. You have time to get it done. You have time to think.
A lot of interruptions are tough. That's the toughest part. And what you would normally spend an hour or two to get quality takes 6 or 7 hours because we have to have conversations with people coming in. I want to sell them a book and see what's going on in their lives.
Tom Wayne, you brokered more than $20 million worth of real estate back in the 1980s. How did you go from real estate to Prospero's books?
Well, that's probably a several drink discussion, but that was over the course of approximately 10 years. There just came a point in time when I decided I didn't want to have to buy $500-$600 clothes every day.
Mm-hmm.
And decided I wanted to do something else. It came about with a handful of other changes in life, but I decided I was just going to read and write and not do anything, and I was unencumbered enough that I could try it. And about 10 years later, I stumbled into Prosperos, or actually not, like 6 years later.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, had I not made that decision, I would have never ended up here, which is odd. So.
Yeah. Now, I bet over the years, the two of you have had some pretty strange requests for books. Like what?
I had a sitting governor of the state of Missouri call me and trying to have me track down original first docs of Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some funny outgrowth of that because that guy's like, okay, I'll look for him and help you find it, but we need a poet laureate in the state of Missouri.
Yeah. How about you, Tom?
Well, it's more the characters that come in and what they say, even people that don't buy books. Dancing is around that answer politically, I would say I am. I tend to not be able to help the people that want to read theology or any sort of religion-related stuff.
Yeah.
And but more than that are some of the people that come in the door that had an old man come in one day after he admitted that he'd had a couple belts next door at D.B. Cooper's and said, I wouldn't have come in here unless I'd done that. But when he walked in the door, he said, is this a liberal bookstore? And there was a couple of us behind the counter that it's like, wow, this is open season. What do we say to this guy? But we ended up talking to him for 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a certain bordering on Tea Party mad old man. And
yeah.
Spitting mad at Obama, but we managed to get him to take What's the Matter with Kansas out the door.
Well, there you go.
No, he brought it back the next day.
<Did he>? No thanks.
Really disheartening.
Well, we're going to talk in our second half today about Tom and Will's favorite books and authors they'd invite to a dinner party, but I wanted to go back just for a moment to that National Endowment for the Arts survey because on the downside, it pointed out that the percentage of adults reading works of literature, you know, novels and short stories and poetry and plays, has declined since 2008, returning back to 2002 lows. Will Latham, are you surprised by that?
No. I mean, our daily lives are more beset, and a bigger chunk of America is having to face some pretty tough stuff in the economy for the last decade. So I imagine those pressures make us read different things, not just escape. And God knows I love escape.
Yeah. You know. Some other interesting findings from the survey. More women read than men. Tom, does that surprise you?
Well, not me, because I kind of see it.
Do you see it?
We tried to track it, actually, at one point.
And found.
For a few months. And there were a few more women than men. Not mm-hmm. quite 60%.
Yeah, this said 64% to 45% is what the National Endowment for the Arts found. And the biggest readers are older adults, ages 65 to 74. They have the highest rate of reading of any age group. Do you see that here?
Well, they finally quit working.
Yeah, well, they
have a little more time.
Yeah, do you see that in here?
I mean,
I wouldn't say
that right off, but uh-huh. this is a younger neighborhood. I mean, you're eating out, you're dining out, you're going to a bar for a drink, you're down here for a show. Yeah. So that possibly is a younger demographic, but we see a broad spectrum of folks. I wouldn't be able to say it was.
And Will, you're a poet, so the worst news out of this survey was for poets. People reading poetry for pleasure had plunged in the last decade, dropping by 45% among adults who read books for pleasure. Less than 7% now say they read poetry. Less than 7%.
But that's probably 45% write it.
Yeah.
It's become therapy for a lot of people. And that's part of the scenario, is that more people are in trying to do so for whatever reason. And they aren't. You ask that question a lot of poetry readings. It's like, well, what did you read? And it's like, well, I don't read any poetry, yeah. but I'm going to read you mine.
Yeah. Well, let's do this. Let's take a break. I should just point out, too, we're going to have former U.S. Poet Laureate Billy Collins on Up to Date later on this month. When we come back from a break, we're going to talk some more with Will and Tom about their favorite books, which authors would they want to invite to a dinner party, and a whole lot more. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star. We're coming live to you from Prospero's Books on 39th Street in Kansas City, Missouri. We'll be back right after a short break. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed our discussion on how technology is transforming everyday objects and navigating the college application process, you can find those talks at kcur.org. Monday on the show, a debate between Ed Eilert and Patricia Leitner, the two candidates running for Johnson County Commission, plus the big new biography on Bill Cosby. That's Monday on Up to Date. Where again, we're coming to you live this morning from Prospero's Books on West 39th Street in Kansas City. We're talking about books, the future of the printed word, the joys and pains of running a used bookstore. In our second half today, we're going to have Will Latham and Tom Wayne. We're going to talk now about some of their favorite books and authors, and which three authors they'd invite to a dinner party. I've got my list, and I'm hoping our listeners have one too. If they want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888. Again, 816-235-2888. They can also drop us a tweet at KCUR Up to Date. You know, I'm asking the wrong guys, you know, this question, but is too much emphasis these days placed on new books by the reading public as opposed to older books and classics? Tom, does that make any sense to you?
Well, yeah, kind of as we talked about earlier, certain kinds of books or types of books kind of circulate through the culture that aren't necessarily bestseller stuff.
Yeah.
And it's more timeless, and certain landmark books retain their relevancy for certain age people and that aren't that don't appear on the bestseller list.
But people are always talking about what's the new hot book, and that seems to be sort of where everyone's always going with that conversation.
Yeah, that stuff kind of goes right by us since mm-hmm. we don't sell the new hot book. I mean, you know, everything's used. It makes its way in. New stuff does make its way in.
Mm-hmm.
It's for some reason, is stuff that we would read.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's because we'd read everything.
Yeah. Do you worry about the focus on the new as opposed to the good old oldies kind of thing, Will?
Just a few weeks ago, I had one of those epiphanies. I'm over 50 now, and I started looking at my list of things I wanted to read before I was done.
Yeah.
And I started going, well, I'm just not going to hit it because there's new stuff happens every day. I mean, we have mm-hmm. to be alive in our current culture as well as aware of that our current culture was built on stuff before us. So a happy medium. I try and juggle back and forth between something new and something old and something fiction and nonfiction.
Well, again, I want to get our listeners involved in our conversation today because we're talking books and good books. And a couple of questions on the table. Who's your personal pick for the best writer who ever lived? If you could require the president to read one book, what book would it be? And if you're hosting a literary dinner party, which three writers would you invite to your house for that dinner party? 816-235-2888 is our number, and I'm hoping some listeners will call and give us their picks, because Tom and Will are going to give us some of theirs right now. Let's go to these questions. You know, they sort of come from the New York Times. So they ask authors each week in a feature they call By the Book, and it's sort of a standard set of questions that they roll through each week. And one of those questions, Will, is what books are currently on your nightstand?
Like I mentioned earlier, I'm reading Shadow of the Wind by Zafon. It's a little bit of magical realism set around books and the world of books. I'm reading a collection of essays by the late David Foster Wallace called Oblivion. It's essays and short fiction. Mm-hmm. And what a tragic loss. Cool. What a great mind he had, and acute. Also reading A History of Cheese in America.
A history? Now, why are you reading a book about the history of cheese in America?
Because the old cartoon says, I like cheese.
Yeah. Just that simple.
It's that simple. And cheese is a very local and wonderful thing. In America, you know, we managed to pasteurize it, and there was a big debate just this year about what we were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, those are the three that are there right now, and they come and go very fast. And there's a big pile teetering next to that one, too.
Yeah,
the on-deck circle.
That's my problem, too. If you host a radio talk show, you'd be amazed at how quickly you compile just stacks of books that you just hope someday you can get through, but worry that someday you won't. But do you actually have a list of books you want to get through, Will, before it's too late?
Yeah, a big one.
Yeah. So. You actually have it written down?
Yeah, it's in a computer. Mm-hmm. So if I run out of ideas, there's a giant existential crisis that happens when I finish one thing before I start the next, because I don't know what you're in the mood for, and it's got to be the right thing.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I go and consult the list occasionally.
Tom Wayne, do you keep a list of the books you got to get through before it's too late?
No, I just more whatever kind of takes my fancy that walks through the door, which is kind of one of all hallmarks that people talk about. As I said earlier, the stuff we put on the tables doesn't really make it to the shelves, but a lot of people walk in and they find what they need there and go out. And my reading's changed since I've had a bookstore. I do a lot of poking around in books. I mean, I'll spend time with a book, but I don't read it. It used to be the opposite. I would just read a book. And
but you don't feel obligated to get through the whole thing anymore.
No, I do a lot of just poking around in books.
It drives me crazy. If I start a book and I don't finish it, I just feel not right about the whole thing. And I don't know why it sticks with me, but it does.
Well, there's too many books out there to feel like that.
I get that.
It's fun to poke around in a lot of things. And if they're really good, I finish them.
Mm-hmm. What's on your nightstand right now?
As I said, Bell Jar, Sylvia Plath is a curious read. A lot of miscellaneous cultural criticism. Morris Berman, Brodeur Lard, the French writer. Things I've recently read that are still on the night table that I pick up again, which I didn't also used to do as a kid. Into Thin Air and Under the Indifferent Stars Above, a story about the Donner Party.
Oh, no kidding.
Which is literally terrifying.
Really?
I recommend that.
What's
I don't
the title of that book again?
Under the Indifferent Stars Above.
Wow. Wow.
And the guy's name is slipping me right now. But there's a lot been written on the Donner Party, but this was absolutely riveting, and you'll feel like you're on the trip.
Yeah. Well, again, we're coming to you live from Prospero's Books on 39th. We're looking for our listeners to call in with their personal pick for the best writer who ever lived. If you could require the president to read one book, what would it be? Or you're hosting a literary three writers are invited. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. So, Tom, who's your personal pick for the best writer who ever lived? What's your sense?
That's kind of a big question.
Yes, it is a big. I ask big questions here.
That one's kind of escaped me. People will ask, you know, my favorite band also, and it's a plethora of things, and I feel bad. I'm having a hard time landing on an answer, but I'll I'm going to dredge one up before the end of the show.
Okay, Will Latham, you're on the spot now. You got to come up with something.
I have to have one.
You got to have one.
Well, I saw in the cribbing notes it was Hemingway or Steinbeck. It used to be Hemingway when I was young, and
yes.
Again, can see in read and considered very relevant.
I love Steinbeck stuff.
Cannery Row. Every time I read Cannery Row, I think Street.
Really? I went to school, spent some time on Cannery Row, and that beat me up for a couple years there. I still love diving into that stuff.
You know, there was a sequel, right?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, a lot of people didn't. I didn't until it came in here one afternoon.
What was it called?
Something Thursday.
Oh, it's Sweet Thursday.
Sweet Thursday, yeah. Sweet Thursday. It was almost as good as the first one. The first one is pretty tough to beat, though.
Yeah.
And the movie was good.
Yeah, okay.
I'll ride Steinbeck right now.
Okay. Ever written about the Civil War, Tom? No?
Will? Not the guy. Where's Condra when we need him, the guy? Yeah. Jason's got one over there.
What is it, Jason?
Killer Angels.
Oh, boy, you're taking it right off my list. Killer Angels by Michael Shera.
Yeah.
We've had his son, Jeff Shera, in two or three times talking about the novels he's written about the Civil War. And let's go to some phone calls here. Let's go to Brent from Kansas City, Missouri. Brent, you're on up.
Hello. Yeah, the book that
Brent.
Would require a... Hi, can you hear me?
Hello? Yes.
Oh, yeah, the book I would require president to read would be Dreadnought by Robert K. Massey. Two reasons. Number one, it would help a president understand how simplistic little things as far as taxation can lead to different foreign policy, and in essence, it's mundane things that lead to world wars. And the other reason, it's a really long book, and it might keep the president from creating more problems.
You know, that is such a great by Robert Massey. My dad's read it. I've got it, and I've got to get there. It's Grant. Thank you for calling. Let's go back to some more calls and go to Hyla from Kansas City, Kansas. Hyla, good morning to you.
Hi. I just wanted to say that
good
Zelda
morning.
Fitzgerald and I want to say Zelda Fitzgerald and Sylvia Plath are probably my two favorite authors because they do such a great job of explaining what it feels like to be depressed and mentally ill. And I also wanted to say that Prosperis is part of the reason I moved into this neighborhood.
Thank you.
Hyla, thank you so much for the call. I appreciate it. Again, our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Your pick for best writer who ever lived and who a literary dinner party. Which three home for an event like that? Okay. What kind of reader were you as a child, Will Latham?
You know, you slip on the banana peel and fall in on various things. Edgar Rice Burroughs got me going, and I read everything. Mm. And he wrote, it's just mind candy. I mean, there's no depth in this stuff. It's fast. It's furious.
It's
Tarzan. Tarzan, Mars, Venus, the hollow earth, and rescuing girls. And though he did write two really wonderful historical pieces. One is called I Am Barbarian, and it's about Little Boots or Caligula growing up. And then the other one is about a lost, historically based, a lost heir to one of the kings who postulates that he was kidnapped and raised as an outlaw.
Yeah.
Just fantastic and moved fast. And I have a lot of parents come in here and it's like, well, I wish they would read something more. It's like, get them reading, man. Let them read graphic novel. It moves and holds them. And once you're hooked, it's pretty hard to unhook yourself.
Don't you miss that when you were a kid and you read a book and get absolutely lost and absorbed into it? And it seems like maybe one of the downsides of growing older is it's harder to do that. Time to get lost. Tom Wayne, how about the books that you got lost in as a kid?
One book that really sticks in my mind over the years and was riveting back then was Serpico by Peter Moss.
Oh, yeah.
And I was probably in junior high when I read that. And
long afterwards.
And that book just, I had no idea there was a world like that. Mm-hmm. And I tended to, as a kid, read a lot of miscellaneous nonfiction, kind of like that. I also, high schooler, read a lot of Ayn Rand.
Look like her.
Thanks, Will. That's helpful.
It's interesting to get into discussions about her in the bookstore because she's seriously polarizing. I liked what I read. I don't read her anymore, but she's got something that most people miss, especially the conservatives miss her.
Yeah.
Her lesson of moral character. Like some people is an oxymoron, but, you know, come in and we'll buy you a beer. We'll talk about that.
Yeah. We're coming to you live this morning from Prospero's Books. I have some phone calls here. Let's go to Jane from Kansas City, Missouri. Jane, nice to have you this morning.
Oh, hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello?
Hi. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not sure about the greatest author ever, but the books that I keep on my nightstand are all Ellen Gilchrist short stories. I read them over and over and have for the past 35 years. And so as I age, I find different things in her work. The books that I would have a president read are Mann's 1491 and 1493, as well as Paulette Giles' Enemy Women. And if I were to have... someone come to dinner, it would be Paulette Giles and Ellen Gilchrist.
Huh. Why did you pick the books you picked, Jane, for to read? What's your thinking behind that?
For a president? I'm sorry, my connection is bad. Because I think so many people don't understand the history of the world, the history of North and South America. And after reading those books a couple of years ago, I understand so much more why things are the way they are now.
Jane, thanks for the good call and great recommendations. I appreciate it. Let's go to Dan from Belton. Dan, you're on Up to Date. We're coming to you from Prospero's Bookstore. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi. Great show. My nomination for the greatest author would have to be the author that made me love to read, and that would be Edgar Rice Burroughs. I think I learned to love to read between the John Carter series and the Tarzan series, and actually still read them today in a bit of a collection of those books. But anyway, that's all I had on my mind.
Dan, thank you for the call, and we understand our listeners may be experiencing some short losses of signal. We apologize for that inconvenience, and we're going to shoulder on here and try to get all this figured out. Keep going with some phone calls here. Linda from Kansas City, Missouri. Nice to have you, Linda.
Hey, how you doing? I really enjoy your show, Steve, and I like Prospero's. I go in there often. But I just wanted to say I'd have the president read Calvin and Hobbes.
Why's that?
I think he needs to laugh once in a while, and he could read it with his kids or his wife. I think he'd have a good time reading it. And then my favorite authors, when I was a kid, I read The Once and Future King, Charles White. And always after that, I've read mythology, and I've just been fascinated with Joseph Campbell and those kind of things. And Steinbeck's... To a God Unknown, I love that book also. Ayn Rand fascinates me, and I can't figure her out, and I never found anybody who could figure out why she's so fascinating.
I was as influenced by Steinbeck as I was Ayn Rand, and we're thinking about a discussion group on those two writers. They represent the polar opposites of literary fiction in America, and they wrote 20 years apart, and those two books as part of a discussion are something that we've thought about putting together.
That's great. You know, Will, if you had to name one book that made you who you are today, you would point to what?
A Movable Feast by Hemingway.
Because?
His years in Paris, and he just set out and did it. And it was the first time I realized that if I wanted to be a writer, you could do it. It's going to take some sacrifices, but you just do it.
Ned writes to us on Twitter, I found a memory of 15 years ago sitting in the front of Prospero's by the window reading Solon in ancient Greek with graduate students. That ring a bell, Will?
It does ring a bell.
Yeah. Okay. Let's keep going down our list here. If you could require the president to read one book, what would it be, Tom Wayne?
It'd probably be a toss-up between A Bright Shining Lie and Daniel Ellsberg's Secrets.
Bright Shining Lie, Neil Sheehan?
Neil Sheehan on Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And Daniel Ellsberg's Secrets, which is kind of a autobiography of his, but it's also a history of, you know, America, Vietnam War going on. And I would sit in the room until he read them both.
Yeah. With him.
Yeah. Will, you pick what?
At Orwell's Down and Out in London and Paris. I think that politics today are so insulated from the way almost everybody in America lives their life. Mm-hmm. And you read that book, and it's getting on 100 years old. And I've worked in food service before, and it's exactly the same now as it was then.
Back to some calls here. Let's go to Sherry from Kansas City, Missouri. Sherry, welcome to Up to Date.
Thank you. One of my favorite books is Gail Jones, The Healer, and the other one is Zora Neale Hurston's Their Eyes Were Watching God, and I really am glad that you have
great book.
Wonderful men on talking about literacy. They are a big help to my son, Yakini. So have a great day, and I'm glad you're being recognized in the city. Bye.
Sherry, thank you for the call. Let's go to Betty from Kansas City, Missouri. Betty, you're on Up to Date. We're coming to you from Prospero's Bookstore, one of the city's sort of natural treasures here on 39th Street. Good morning.
Good morning. I would just like to say my favorite author of all time would have to be Mark Twain. My husband and I had both read him in high school, but now I'm 75, he's 71. You read it again when you're older, and the books are completely different, and there's way more depth to them. So I just wanted to nominate Mark Twain for the greatest author ever. Thank you.
Betty, that's just a great pick.
Missouri honoriness, right?
Missouri honoriness. Boy, isn't that a good point, Will. Yeah. Well, back here at the table, one other question the New York Times asks of great writers every week. You're hosting a literary dinner party. Which three writers are invited? Tom Wayne, who are you going with?
I'd like to see William Burroughs and Barack Obama in the same room.
And what would happen there, Tom?
And I'm going to throw in a couple more. Hunter Thompson and Christopher Hitchens.
That'd be a lively dinner party, wouldn't it? And a lot of food might end up on the walls, too.
Barry might get beat up at that one. But
yeah. Will Latham, how about you?
So I'm going to go back. God, Hitchens. He always – Twain and Hitchens, we've been talking books all day, and all these questions we were thinking through, and I love both of them, and they never got onto my list. How does that happen?
Yeah.
But I'd invite Orwell, of course. I would invite Oscar Wilde because he was supposedly one of the greatest raconteurs in the world. Yeah. And then I'd invite Dave Eggers. I don't know if you guys have followed Dave Eggers and McSweeney's. I got to meet him at another great Kansas City bookstore about a year ago down at the Reading Reptile.
Yeah.
And – man, what a character. Yeah. What a lively mind, and what a character.
Well, this may not surprise a lot of folks who I'd invite. We just had David McCullough on the show last week, and he is just a national treasure. We could have gone five straight shows with David McCullough, maybe Doris Kearns Goodwin and William Manchester as well, Robert Caro talking about presidential power and talking about the presidency and how power is utilized in this country. That would be a pretty good time for me. Back to some calls here. Let's go to Gene. Gene from Shawnee. Gene, you're on Up to Date. Nice to have you.
Oh, thank you. Good to be here. I want to recommend Octavio Paz, Mexican author, Labyrinth of Solitude, tremendous insight into the Mexican psyche. Of course, there's other great Mexican-American authors, Sandra Cisneros, House on Mango Street, and so many emerging Latino artists and authors that are out there. And, of course, the whole panoply of Latin American literature, Ciro Alegría, El Mundo es Ancho y Ajeno. So there's so many out there that I think American audiences just don't know anything about, but it's wonderful literature.
Yeah, thanks, Gene. I appreciate that. Gentlemen, disappointing, overrated, just not good. What book did you feel as if you were supposed to like and you really didn't like it?
Tom Wayne's going to hunt me down and break my knees, but I never could do Gravity's Rainbow. I tried three times, and it's one of his faves.
That book is, tell us about it.
It's thick, and I mean, it's clearly written. It's a lot like Ulysses, written by a man who has a big mind, and he's doing big things, and for me, it always felt like he was trying to write about doing big things and having a big mind. And Tom loves and swears by this.
But I forgot to mention Thomas Pynchon, but there is a companion out that makes that book readable.
Mm-hmm.
I was like that about Ulysses. We had a book club here on Ulysses.
And on Pynchon years ago.
And I didn't – we got about three-quarters of the way through it, and it just – it didn't strike me.
Yeah.
It was
–
we're going to be drubbed in the streets, you know this,
right.
Don't you?
How about the books that you're embarrassed not to have read yet, Will Latham?
Cervantes' Don Quixote.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I shouldn't admit this
publicly,
either.
You're going to say this publicly, aren't you?
I'm woefully uneducated on Shakespeare, and my store is named after.
That's not a good thing, Tom.
No, I don't know how it's happened all these years, but I think everybody has something in their life that they don't know how it happened.
But you're amongst friends here, so we're going to go with that. I want to thank Prospero's Books for hosting us here, the staff from Up to Date, Tom Wayne, Will Latham, the co-owners of Prospero's Books. Gentlemen, what a great conversation. Thanks so much
for having us
here today. Really enjoyed it. And thanks to all your customers for hanging out here and watching today as well. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. You can follow me at Steve Kraske. Our theme music is composed by Bobby Watson. We had help this week from KCUR's Linda Scher, Michael Byers, Bill Brownlee, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, and Eliza Spurtis. Our senior producer is Steven Steigman. Have a great weekend, all. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.